So I'm here today to talk about a program that the Health Resources and Services Administration implements. It's called the Patient Navigator Outreach and Chronic Disease Prevention Demonstration Program, which is quite a mouthful, so I'll refer to it as PNDP. You can see me and the co-authors listed here. Again, I have no relationships to disclose. First of all, I'm just going to give some background about the Patient Navigator program that HRSA implements, as well as the evaluation that was tied to it, which was had to be done through the authorizing legislation. And then we'll talk about some lessons learned and recommendations for future work in this area. It's the Patient Navigator Outreach and Chronic Disease Prevention Act of 2005. It was passed by Congress in that year to amend the Public Health Service Act, and then was later amended by the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act in 2010, excuse me. Which authorized a demonstration program to develop and implement patient navigator services to improve healthcare outcomes for individuals with cancer and other chronic diseases, with a specific emphasis on health disparity populations. Patient navigators, if you're not familiar, are typically individuals from the communities they serve to assist patients in identifying and overcoming barriers to care. The initial funding cycle for this program, it was first funded in 2008 for a two-year period that ran through FY 2010 and through the reauthorization in the ACA through 2015. I'm going to be talking about some preliminary findings from that initial two-year demonstration period from 2008 to 2010. So the methods, we awarded 8 grantees in 2008. They're from all over the country in a variety of different settings. They include community health centers, hospitals, and other primary care settings, as well as a community-based organization. We collected quantitative data through cross-site data elements. We also had grantees report on site-specific data, which tended to be clinical in nature, as well as we conducted qualitative data methods using focus groups and key informant interviews, as well as grantees submitted qualitative quarterly reports with a variety of different information in them. Data was collected from September of 2009 when we received OMB clearance through the end of the project period in August of 2010. The program provided health education and screening to over 20,000 people during that approximately 12-month period of data collection, and full navigation services were provided to 6,567 patients. This is just a little model of how patients were actually recruited into full navigation. As you can see, we did community outreach to over 20,000 people, but only 619 patients were recruited into full navigation from that patient population. What we're terming inReach was patients were recruited from existing clinic populations. 5,948 of the 6,567 were recruited from existing patient populations, mostly due to high need in those areas and ease of recruitment from existing disease management programs that were ongoing within the healthcare setting. These are just some descriptive statistics about the patient population that was reached. 76% was female. A majority of the population did not have a high school education. 22% African American and 60% Hispanic. And a majority of the population did not speak English as their first language. As you can see, a very low household income, 85% less than $20,000 per year. 56% of patients did not have any health insurance whatsoever. 12% were covered by Medicaid. And then you can see some prior medical history in terms of ER and hospital visits among the population. Again, this information was self-reported, so the reliability is in question. In terms of describing our patient navigators that were employed through the program, we hired a total of 37, or the grantees hired a total of 37 patient navigators among the 8 sites. Their age, mean age, was 41 years old. 89% were female, 57% Hispanic, and 27% African American. Again, that mirrors very nicely with the patient population that we were serving. 54% had no college degree, so they were certainly lay navigators, and 65% were multilingual, most of which having English as not their first language, but also spoke English. And in some cases, navigators spoke up to three languages. This is very important for the program because it was important for us to ensure that navigators were taken from the populations that they would be serving through the program. So the primary tasks of patient navigators, there are actually six of them included in the authorizing legislation that I'll just go through very quickly. Those included assisting in the coordination of healthcare services and provider referrals, facilitating the involvement of community organizations, so really ensuring that there is that community link so that the full scope of needs for these populations were met. Notifying individuals of clinical trials, anticipating, identifying, and helping patients overcome barriers within the healthcare system, coordinating health insurance coverage for the patients, which would either be single service, clinic-based, or Medicare, Medicaid, or if they were eligible for private insurance, and then conducting ongoing outreach to health disparities populations. To assist them into accessing care. So those kind of duties that were included in the legislation kind of shook out into these primary tasks that are listed on this slide here, which included providing patient education in a manner that's culturally competent and personally accessible, coordinating the logistics of patient care, and providing input to healthcare providers and the larger healthcare system to ensure that patient care is more patient-centered. Just a little bit of background. Patient navigation traditionally has been focused on cancer and navigating patients either into cancer screening as a preventative focus or from abnormal result to diagnostic testing and then from a positive diagnosis into treatment. That's kind of how the model emerged initially. This is the first federally funded program that actually includes, extends patient navigation to other chronic diseases. Some of our sites were looking exclusively at cancer, some were looking at cancer as well as other chronic diseases, and some sites were looking exclusively at other chronic diseases. The most common chronic diseases include diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease. That's where the needs in the communities were really at. And so one of the novel aspects of this program was actually extending the model of patient navigation into chronic disease, which is what we're talking about here. Navigating for chronic disease really involves long-standing ongoing interactions with the healthcare system. For cancer, there's generally very nice endpoints. You want to get a patient to screening, you want to get a patient to diagnosis, or you want to get a patient to treatment. With chronic disease navigation, there are a multitude of what we called targets, and that could be to primary care, it could be to specialty care, it could be to community resources, it could be to health insurance coverage organizers. So all of those targets had to be taken into account. Another kind of nuance is that really for chronic disease, there's no true endpoint by definition of being chronic, whereas again, in contrast with cancer, there is often very nice clean endpoints. Chronic disease navigation is complex. It involves caregivers from multiple specialties. Another big difference between cancer and primary care navigation is that it involves lifestyle change. The way that you're going to get people under control for diabetes or hypertension is through diet and exercise, as well as regularly taking prescribed medications. Those things are not easy to get people to do, and as I'm speaking about it, I sound a little coercive, and it's really creating that relationship with the patient so that you impart the importance of lifestyle change to them and work lifestyle change really into their existing cultural beliefs as well as how they're living their lives and actually making it work for them. And that's an important point because navigators often, I think in 5 of 6 cases in terms of the grantees, were trained in motivational interviewing, which is really a technique used to create that relationship with patients. And again, for many different types of financial assistance and health coverage for chronic disease patients, it involves complex applications for healthcare coverage that are either clinic or single service based, and those have to be kind of renegotiated every year and are complex, time consuming, and often aren't very user friendly. So there are 3 potential outcomes. Again, all of this information is preliminary based on just about a little over a year of data. But they include improved access to care for health disparities populations. Certainly we saw that patients were getting to their navigator-assisted appointments, most notably in primary care. Patients who were navigated to primary care by and large got there, which is certainly an improvement from what was happening. There's improved continuity of care between all of the different specialties and departments within a large health system. Patients have to get from the primary care doctor to the social worker to the health coverage person to the pharmacy assistance department, and all of that requires navigation, and certainly we saw an improvement in patients getting there and understanding why they needed to be there. And then improved efficiency and effectiveness of care. There are multiple anecdotal tales of ways that navigators brought information from patients back to healthcare providers, and healthcare providers can then use that information when they're treating that patient. Information that a normal FQHC doctor or NP or PA is not going to get in their 15-minute appointment time. So navigators were really there to contextualize care, both for the patient as well as the healthcare provider. Some lessons learned. We certainly had many lessons learned, and we are this program continues with a new funding cycle that was awarded in 2010, and so these are being implemented as we move forward. The development of a central database for data collection, we used localized databases in the original program, which obviously if you need to make any changes, adjustments based on what you're learning as you're going along, having a centralized IT capability to do that is certainly very important. In the original round for clinical measures, we asked the sites to develop their own clinical measures that would be important to them, as well as and then report those to HRSA. This time we're including clinical measures with national baselines through existing HRSA resources into the cross-site evaluation. So we'll be able to talk much more about how patients actually improved health outcomes as a result of this program. And we also include the VR12, which is a quality of life measure standardized survey that we're implementing so that hopefully to gather more of the contextual factors and not just the kind of clinical measures that are important to see if people's quality of life really improved as a result of this program. Some limitations for the data that I just told you, obviously the restricted timeline. Getting OMB clearance is quite a headache, and it took a long time, and so that really cut down our time for actual data collection, which is certainly a limitation. We were developing evaluation protocols kind of as we went along and as we learned, so they did change somewhat over time. Once they were implemented, they were implemented pretty standardized, but there was some of that. Again, each site had its own clinical protocols, which we learned from this time, and we're now including that in the cross-site evaluation. The lack of a control group and the small sample size at some sites. We had sample size vary from about 100 patients at one site to about 2,500 patients at another site, depending on the focus of their navigation program. And then just some quick recommendations as we move forward, developing best practices for navigating different patient groups, whether it be socioeconomic, whether it be race and ethnicity, whether it be condition that they're diagnosed with, again, standardizing the collection of baseline and comparison group data. Certainly, access for these chronic disease patients to specialty care, as I spoke about earlier, is quite a difficult thing to do, and so developing best practices and methodologies for really improving that connection between primary and specialty care, especially in a community-based health center setting, developing a cost-benefit analysis for navigation, the eligibility screening for reduced and free care, usually this is clinic-based or single service coverage, is certainly often burdensome, and determining the replicability and applicability of this type of program for other public health areas, which is something that the legislation asks us to do. And there's my contact information.
Thank you.